Mazzara and Parra project to Alimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the bay that scare ya. Machado or Bono or Nolan Garantano.
We'll teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Alazric Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Hey, have you heard of this Gary Sanchez fellow? Pretty good game again for him yesterday. We'll talk about Sanchez. We'll talk about some hitters to add. Randall Grichuk and Aaron Ciarte. Are you interested? Welcome to the show. We also had some really terrible pitching last night from Jacob deGrom, from Zach Greinke, from Trevor Bauer, from Marco Estrada. So we'll go through all of that.
And just beginning more. The list there.
What is that?
We have Teron, Zach Greinke. Keeps going.
Oh, it's terrible. Bad pitching night last night. Have you heard that pitching sucks this year, Scott?
Oh, I've lived it, Adam.
Yeah.
I have lived it.
Yeah, well, we all lived it last night. It wasn't a very good night. But if you had there were three pitchers yesterday who are having great years, Tanaka, Porcello, and Kyle Hendricks, excuse me, they had good starts yesterday. They are dominating. Interesting stuff. How are you, Scott White?
I'm just fine, Adam. What about you?
Yeah, I'm good. I had a realization last night when Jacob deGrom had that bad start. Probably... You know, look, it's a little early. We're only halfway through the first week of a 2-week playoff in the podcast league, but he really hurt me last night. But anyway, what I'm saying is, I don't think I'm going to win one fantasy league this year. I don't know. I've had a lot of good teams. I don't think I had any really bad teams. In fact, I don't think I was bottom half of any of my leagues. But it just hasn't worked out. I don't have one. I still have some opportunities. Podcast league, a league I'm playing with some friends. But I don't think I'm gonna win one stinking league this year. I think I'm in five or six leagues. I'm not gonna win one. I can't believe it.
Well, you have to like the consistency, though, right? You were like what, second to sixth in every league.
Pretty much. Well, look, I mean, one of the leagues I didn't make the playoffs, a 14 team league, but. You know, the points scored, it's kind of like your podcast league team. It was a good team. I think I had like the third or fourth most points. So that was frustrating. I think that team was really good. That might have been my best squad. But, you know, the mistake I made, did not make enough trades. I had some really good sell high guys. I don't know that I knew it at the time, but Danny Salazar was one. I said this before. I should have traded him. I freaking knew it. And Myers was a little more interesting because I invested such a late pick in Will Myers that I felt like even if he fell off, I was still going to be happy with what I got from him. But he's killing me right now, Scott. Will Myers has just been destroying my fantasy teams.
Well, I think he'll bounce back.
It's too late.
Cold streak.
It's too late for that.
It's too late for him to bounce back.
I believe strongly in trades. I really do. In fantasy sports, I believe that it is hard to win a good active league without making trades. And
right, but the kinds of trades you're suggesting here are like, yes, this guy's going to fall off. Like,
I knew Danny Salazar wasn't that good.
No, yeah, but I mean, he was one of the more reliable one of the very few reliable pitchers in baseball in the first half.
He was, but he wasn't going that deep into games. There were still like a lot of weird starts where he would go like five innings and dominate and throw a lot of pitches. And maybe this is just,
I don't know,
taking it too personally. But
I think this is hindsight being 2020.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. But I'm frustrated right now, especially with Jacob deGrom. But I have hope that he'll bounce back, and we'll talk about him. Here's your stat of the day. Well, there are a bunch of stats here, but Gary Sanchez became the fifth player in baseball history to have 9 home runs in his first 21 games. He's actually had 9 home runs in his first 19 games. We have to go all the way back to find the last example of this. We have to go all the way back to the first month or two of the season when Trevor Story did it. So, two players this year have hit 9 or more home runs in their first 21 games. Trevor Story and Gary Sanchez. Before that, Alvin Davis in 1984. And Sanchez was intentionally walked twice yesterday. And I also asked Chris to look into the exit velocity and all that stuff. Sanchez has the fifth highest average exit velocity in baseball right now. And Keon Broxton is third, according to Chris Towers. And he says, what? That's crazy. My question for you, Scott, would you consider using Gary Sanchez as your utility if it came down to that?
I mean, what scenario? I think it would the only way it would come down to that is if you had Wilson Ramos, Buster Posey, or Jonathan Lucroy as well as Sanchez.
Yeah.
And I mean, if that's the case, I guess you'd have to think about it. I mean, it helps that he never really sits like most catchers do. He just DHs when he's not catching. And that's part of the reason why I like him so much, even anticipating, you know, obviously he's going to fall off from here. He's not going to be a 50 home run guy. But he's going to be good. He's going to be a good power hitter. And unlike Trevor Story, who, you know, didn't really drop off that much in terms of overall production, he was a must-start shortstop right till the point he got hurt. Gary Sanchez doesn't strike out all that much.
Yeah.
One every five at bats so far. And it's not like it was a big problem throughout his minor league career. So I don't see, other than just law of averages regressing to the mean, I don't see a lot of reason for a lot of red flags here.
Okay, well, we've spent a lot of time, a lot of days talking about Gary Sanchez. Own him, start him, he's hitting great. Wednesday standout. Scott, who stood out to you on Wednesday?
I'm going to bring up Nick Markakis because I'm not sure there would be an opportunity to bring him up otherwise.
You're right about that.
He has been surprisingly productive for a long time. About 60 games. 59 is where I'm going to start it at. June 19th. What day is your birthday, by the way?
Are you being serious right now?
Yeah.
Dude, it's June 19th. Nick Markakis.
Really?
It's my birthday.
I figured it had to be right around there. Well, he might be the gold standard for Surge's beginning Adam's birthday because since June 19th, again, 59 games, he has hit 8 of his 9 home runs. So that's in about a 228 at-bat span. You're talking about a 20-homer pace. You know, 311, his usual good plate discipline. He is the 18th best outfielder in head-to-head points leagues during that stretch.
How come you never look up Roto? How come you have no love for the Roto community?
Well, I think it's hard in Roto using the Roto formula to compare players. It just makes for a difficult basis for comparison. I feel like Roto value is mostly a matter of how much you need a particular thing that a player provides, and that's how valuable that player is to you in Roto.
Mm-hmm.
When head to head, I mean, it just gives a balanced, full, complete picture of his entire range of output. And And I think it makes it easier to compare players because they're all competing on equal terms. They're just competing on points. They're not competing in different categories. So that's why.
Yeah. All right. Finish your thought on Nick Markakis, and then I'll come back to that, and I'll talk about Brandon Moss and his points versus Roto, basically, over the last 28 days. And there is one kind of thing when you compare the two that you have to keep in mind. But go ahead, Scott. Go ahead and finish on Markakis. Pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, I feel like it's easy to forget that for the bulk of his career, he's been about a 15 to 20 homer guy. Obviously, hasn't come close to that the last couple years, but he had that spinal fusion surgery a couple years ago. And there's been some talk, I know, on Braves broadcast about how he's feeling like he's able to get back to driving the ball now, finally, more than a year after that surgery. And I mean, maybe that's just a way of explaining a hot streak because nobody just wants to call it a hot streak. But I mean, he hasn't shown he was even capable of the kind of power he's delivering now. And I think it makes him an undervalued player in points leagues and yeah, maybe even Roto too. It's a little easier to start him in Roto since it's 5 outfielders usually instead of 3. And I don't think he's actually a top 20 player at the position rest of season, but I think he's more usable than we give him credit for.
All right, so I was going to give you 3 hitters that you could potentially add right now that are owned in less than 40% of leagues. Markakis is owned in 40% of our CBSSports.com leagues. Would you rather have Markakis or any of these guys? Randall Grichuk, 3 home runs in his last 5 games, Ender Inciarte, number 15 outfielder in points leagues, number 18 outfielder in roto leagues over the last 28 days. Inciarte has the third most at-bats at the position and the fifth most runs at the position in those 28 days. Or Josh Bell, who's 5-for-13 with one extra base hit, one walk, two strikeouts since being recalled by the Pirates. You got Markakis, Grichuk, Ender Inciarte, Josh Bell. Who are your favorites there?
Well, that's interesting that you include Bell. He has started four straight games at first base. Playing time is something I worry about with him. But so far, so good. And I really like his skill set. I don't know that I'm quite ready to add him just yet. But I think the only ones of that group that I would rank over him are Grichuk in rotisserie, if you're trying to make up ground at home runs, and Markakis in points. And then maybe Bell is just a little behind each of them in their respective formats.
Grichuk and rotisserie and what did you say?
Markakis in points.
Okay.
And Ender Inciarte's last. I mean, he's usable too, but he's kind of like the poor man's Markakis.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, this is one of the kind of sneaky ways to go about points leagues is at-bats. At-bats, plate appearances, yeah. Very important. When you bat leadoff, like I said, third most at-bats at the position over the last 28 days, you'd like for him with those at-bats to be better than 15th in points and 18th in roto, but that's Ender Inciarte for you. He's doing nothing special. He doesn't steal bases, zero steals mm-hmm. in those 28 days, two home runs, but high batting average, so yeah. Not so good.
Yeah.
Justin Upton, Scott. Oh, actually, wait. Before I forget, I want to talk about Brandon Moss. Because when you compare points to roto over a certain amount of time, one thing that really stands out is plate appearances, like I said. So Brandon Moss over the last 28 days, this is his slash line. 28 days for Brandon Moss. 291, 333, 582. So let me see. That's a OPS over 900. I'm not going to do the math. Six home runs, but five walks to 26 strikeouts, which is the other thing that really factors into points leagues, plate discipline, and not necessarily rotisserie leagues, especially if it's not an OBP league. So I can buy it where he is legitimately much better in roto, Brandon Moss, than he is in points leagues. Again, 21st first baseman in the last 28 days in points leagues, 12th in roto. Moss was going to be part of our Splitsville segment here where I looked at players who have some either lefty-righty or home-road splits, and we can talk about them. Obviously, Moss is much, much better against righties. He's also got a much better batting average on the road at home. Anyway, he's 63% owned, and what do you think? I mean, is Brandon Moss like a categories league must-own guy?
Oh, absolutely. I've been touting him over the last couple weeks as the perfect player to pick up if you lost Giancarlo Stanton. And kind of getting back to the roto versus head-to-head and how we assess players in those two formats. I mean, pretty much every time we've talked about Brandon Moss, it's been, hey, he's a great add in roto leagues if you need to make up ground and home runs. I feel like part of the reason why I end up citing where a player ranks in head-to-head as opposed to roto is because roto, it's pretty obvious what a player is going to do for you. You just look at the one stat and you can see where he stacks up against everyone else in that stat or maybe a couple or whatever. But it's just a small group of stats that you need to look at. Head to head, it's much easier for a player to sneak up on people because of what's going on with them peripherally and how that factors into his overall value. So it's kind of the shorthanded way. Like, it's not worth it, in my mind, saying where a player ranks in roto because it only matters what he can do for you and what you need, when in head-to-head, like, where he ranks is everything.
I agree with the second part of what you said. In head-to-head, where he ranks is everything, and it's more comprehensive than the roto rankings. But I do think it's important to point out a guy like Brandon Moss, when if you said Brandon Moss is the number 21 first baseman in the last 28 days. Well, I wouldn't want to pick him up in any format. But if you put the context in, was actually 12th in our 5x5 roto rankings, then, okay, he's not going to be available in those deep roto leagues. But if I'm in a head-to-head categories league, then I'd be more interested in picking him up. Walk to strikeout ratio doesn't matter.
That's where I disagree, because I feel like if he came out as being the 21st base best first baseman in roto leagues, according to some formula that, you know, is based on a roto team that's starting at zero. I mean, that doesn't really tell the story of how he's going to contribute for my specific roto team with its specific breakdown of statistics.
Well, sure, there's got to be some common sense in there. What do I need? Is this guy going to actually help my? Is this guy going to help me and my team? Do I need his power or whatever? But I don't know. We could go around in circles on this. I just think there is a difference in roto value and points league value. You agree with that?
Sure. So. It's overstated, I think, sometimes, but there are a handful of players. Usually the ones who really stand out in one category are better in roto than head to head.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like the stud level players, I don't think there really is that big of a difference.
Oh, the stud level players, no, there isn't. It's usually the guys who stand out in one category or the guys who platoon, you know, or don't have as many at bats. They seem to rank higher in roto than they do in points leagues. Okay. Did we talk about Justin Upton? No, we did not. He's got his fourth straight two-hit game, another home run. He's got 9 RBIs in his last 4 games. Ah, what do you need to see this weekend from Justin Upton to start him in Fantasy Week 22?
Let's see another multi-hit game.
Okay.
Over the weekend, and then I'll be convinced he's on a good enough roll for me to start him. In a 3 outfield league, 5 outfield leagues, I'm probably there already.
Now, I have been a very frustrated fantasy owner lately, but one thing that I've done that hopefully will work out is I have picked up a lot of other teams' trash that they have discarded. I now have a team that has Hunter Pence and Justin Upton in the lineup, and, you know, those are not guys I drafted, and I'm happy about it. I know I'm going to make the playoffs in that league, so I'm hoping those guys come around. If they do, Scott, that might be my one fantasy championship. But if you see people dropping players that you know can turn it around, it's not a bad idea to pick them up as long as you can stash them. Upton, I think, is 90% owned.
People do have an itchy trigger finger this time of year, Adam.
They do.
I feel like.
It makes sense. You got to win now, so take advantage of those owners that have to win now if you're in a better situation. Scott, what do you think about Matt Boyd? He's 47% owned. He's kind of trendy right now.
Yeah, I don't think that much of him, to be perfectly honest. He still has home run issues. He still has efficiency issues, or if not efficiency issues, then just innings issues. And I think maybe the ERA over his last however many starts, 5 or 6, it's pretty impressive. But when you see it's over 5-6 innings at a time, it's not actually leading to much useful in fantasy.
Okay, this is the Rodon argument.
Yeah, well.
Well, I can understand it. I dropped Colin McHugh for Matt Boyd in a league last night.
I mean, Colin McHugh's totally expendable at this point. There's no reason to hold on to him. So if Matt Boyd is the most interesting player on your waiver wire, I can understand that.
Yeah.
I don't think Matt Boyd's going to be the difference between you winning and losing in the end.
No, probably not. I like him, though. He's got some good stuff. He's got a nice changeup. He's definitely not a two-pitch pitcher, which is good.
He is responsible for probably, by the way, it's a 2.38 ERA over his last 9 appearances, 8 of them starts.
Okay.
But let's see. Only 4 of them have been 6 innings plus, 4 of the 9. So anyway, he is responsible for maybe one of my favorite quotes of this season.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, a few starts ago, he said, "I'm only a fraction of the pitcher I'm going to be next year," which I don't even really know what he means by that.
If he knows he's going to be that much better next year,
why not just be better now?
Because that's a good point, but I think he might be showing signs of a breakout. I could see Matt Boyd being a pretty trendy guy in drafts next year, and it goes back to me the first time I saw him pitch when he got called up by the Blue Jays. I think it was a really bad start. But he had obvious stuff, and you were just waiting for him to kind of put it together. And I'm pumped. Like, if I'm in a keeper league and I can keep a waiver wire guy for a last round pick or something, Matt Boyd is somebody I'm definitely looking at.
Well, Matt Boyd was somebody who I liked a lot as like a super sleeper about the time he got called up last year, because he had a 1.65 ERA in the minors last year. And then he was a part of the David Price deal, went from the Blue Jays to the Tigers, and, you know, didn't have the year in the minors that he had last year, but still respectable numbers. I think he's, I don't know. I think maybe there's a chance he could be Alex Wood-like and kind of catch everybody by surprise, at first, and then maybe kind of settle into being a slightly above league average pitcher. But that's, I don't think he has like really high end potential or anything.
Okay. Well, we shall see with Matt Boyd. Don't be too excited about picking up this guy off your waiver wire. But hey, if you have Colin McHugh, make the swap. Before we get into the news and notes, I want to look at the bullpen here. Fernando Rodney got the save last night, and boy, was he lucky. Came in with a 3-run lead, did not give up a run, but he certainly wanted to. It was a struggle. And with the Marlins, Rodney is giving up 8.2 hits per nine and 5.7 walks per nine. He has a 1.54 whip. So why on earth is AJ Ramos setting up for Fernando Rodney?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, originally it was just kind of to ease him in, but we were worried. Chris and I talked about this. We were worried that Rodney just wouldn't give them a reason to go back. And in terms of converting saves, he hasn't. So I don't know if it's going to take the first blown save for Rodney, but if, you know, if I was in a league where saves were hard to find on waivers, I wouldn't even think about dropping Ramos because I think there's a good chance they do switch back.
How about if in the same format here, you're in a league where you need to find saves, Hector Neris, and that's how I've heard it pronounced, but Hector Neris is having a great year. 2.20 ERA, 83 strikeouts in 65 and a third. And Genmar Gomez has been struggling. He's also sort of getting the job done, but not in a very pretty fashion. 4.24 ERA, 20 hits in 17 innings, 7 walks, 11 strikeouts since the All-Star break. Do you think the Phillies could make a change?
I think they could. I wasn't expecting it earlier in the season because I figured they wanted to keep Gomez in that role just to drive up his trade value, but he didn't get traded. I don't know where he stands in terms of clearing waivers or anything like that. I imagine he wouldn't have. So I don't expect him to get traded anymore, in which case, what's the incentive to keep him closing? I'm not sure. I think there's a chance they could change, though. Neris looks like somebody who could be their closer for the long haul.
How about Zach Britton? He gave up a run, an earned run, for the first time in 44 games. He had 43 straight games without allowing an earned run. Kind of amazing. He's not even the number one closer in fantasy. Kenley Jansen is the number one closer in fantasy. Jansen has 15 more strikeouts and a .69 whip. Actually, the research on Zach Britton, who's having an amazing year, only made me realize Kenley Jansen is also having a freaking amazing year.
He's always like the quietest of the stud closers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Rarely
He's
gets talked
terrific.
About. And that's how they are in my relief pitcher rankings. Probably for the last couple months it's been that way. Jansen 1, Britton 2. Britton is getting more talk of maybe winning some hardware at the end of the year just because there's not a clear standout Cy Young guy in the AL, but there really isn't in the NL either. I just think the difference is the contenders in the AL are guys like Quintana, Happ, Porcello, not guys you usually think of as ace caliber pitchers, when in the NL it's more like Bumgarner, Fernandez, Scherzer.
Right.
So I don't think Jansen's going to gain much traction as a Cy Young candidate.
All right. Well, if you are a frustrated fantasy owner like me, you're tired of your lousy teams and making bad starting pitching decisions, why don't you give FanDuel a try? FanDuel.com. Can you trust Max Scherzer? You know he's going to be expensive facing the Baltimore Orioles, who have been hitting pretty well lately. You know, it might be worth the risk. Tom Kohler against the Kansas City Royals, that could be a good one too. I wouldn't recommend Jared Weaver against the Blue Jays, but I would try to get as many Blue Jays as possible and in your lineup. And you know, like Devin Travis might be out tonight, so look at their lineup and see who's leading off. See if there's a really cheap Toronto Blue Jay that you can put in your lineup against Jared Weaver. These are the types of strategies that are going to win you some money on FanDuel.com. We tell you all the time how much we love playing on FanDuel. It's just different. It's different than, you know, the same roster that you have every single day, except for some ad drops here or there. You get a brand new roster every single time you play on FanDuel.com. Play as much or as little as you want. Get on FanDuel.com. You can play for as little as $1. Make some real money. Our listeners win money all the time. So please join that club. And if you're a new user, you're running out of time here, but enter your first league and either win a cash prize in that league or FanDuel's automatically refunding your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. I mean, you basically get to play for free on FanDuel.com. Just sign up and use our promo code HOMERUN. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use our promo code HOMERUN when you sign up on FanDuel.com. The injuries for you. Well, this was interesting from the New York Post, and Joel Sherman talked about two players who were traded at the deadline, Jay Bruce and Josh Reddick. The Mets believe Jay Bruce is pressing. The Dodgers believe that Josh Reddick's swing has gotten long as he's trying to justify the trade that brought him to the Dodgers. Not sure you can really do anything with that. Bruce also left yesterday's game with a calf cramp. We did talk about Bruce. Nobody's dropping Bruce, but how droppable do you think Josh Reddick is, Scott?
I think he's plenty droppable. I don't really think there's much incentive to own him in either format, because it's not like he's delivered big power numbers even when he's been going well this year. It's been mostly, you know, strikeout to walk ratio that's carried him. And, yeah, that only matters in the smaller three outfielder leagues, at least, you know, typical standard format.
Jose Bautista, his return is imminent, and he will most likely DH most of the time when he returns. And Devin Travis could remain as the leadoff hitter, except we want Travis back. He's got this finger injury. He's missed two games. Luis Valbuena is out for the season with a hamstring injury. We're still waiting to see what they do with Gurriel. He's just been pinch hitting. He's also, I think, had a hamstring injury, but he's avoided the DL, and, you know, hopefully will be starting soon. The Marlins acquired Jeff Francoeur in a three-team trade involving Texas and Atlanta. Anything that fantasy owners need to know here, Scott?
No. No. Bench bat for the Marlins, and no notable prospects moving in this deal.
Do you remember when Adrian Gonzalez got traded? What happened to August trades? We at least had that one. That was fun.
When was that? Gonzalez? Yeah, that okay.
The Red Sox.
I was
Dodgers.
Thinking you said Adrian Gonzalez, and I was thinking Adrian Beltre.
Oh,
but yeah, that did happen. That was the biggest August trade I maybe ever.
Yeah,
because I mean, that wasn't just Gonzalez; it was Beckett and Crawford. It was crazy.
It doesn't happen very often, people. Jose Fernandez left with cramps. He was just hot. He's fine. Junior Guerra should be back by September 1st. Zach Cozart could be back this weekend. How do you like the new ballpark for the White Sox? It was U.S. Cellular. It will soon become Guaranteed Rate Field beginning in November, Scott.
I mean, is it any worse than U.S. Cellular?
I like U.S. Cellular. The cell?
That's just because it's been around so long you've gotten used to it. It's still just a sponsorship name.
I feel like, you know, if there's a player who's really good at home at Guaranteed Rate Field, you know, you could be like, he's going to homer, guaranteed.
Yeah,
I think that
kind of works, right?
I think it works, yeah.
You remember when AT&T switched from Pac Bell Park, Pacific Bell? Like, how long did it take you to get used to that?
I don't really remember. I don't really remember having to get used to it.
Well, some people did.
Yeah.
I still sometimes call it Pac Bell.
Whoa.
What's the name of the Diamondback Stadium? I don't even remember the new name.
Chase?
Yeah, it used to be Bank One Ballpark.
Yeah.
And that sounded cool because you were like banking one off that giant fence in center field. Bank One Ballpark.
You could do a lot with Chase, too.
You can.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Yoenis Cespedes hurt his ankle last night. He's just so beat up. And he produces, though. Andrew Benintendi has a left knee sprain. He's going to have an MRI. Steven Wright will start tomorrow. Kyle Seager day-to-day after fouling a ball off his foot a couple days ago. Jordan Zimmermann could be back in a little more than 2 weeks, and the Rays could go to a six-man rotation when Alex Cobb and/or Chase Whitley return from the DL, which should be pretty soon. All right, Scott, we haven't gone quite as fast as I'd like here, so let's pick it up. Pick up the pace. We have a shortened show today. Carlos Santana is going to start off the Splitsville section. I got some guys here that have some pretty big splits, Scott, and I want to know from you if you think these should affect lineup decisions. Carlos Santana, I'm just going to shorten it by saying bad against lefties and really good against righties. 24 of his 27 home runs have come against righties. Does that change anything for you if you have Santana in your lineup and you're looking at the weekly matchups?
Maybe in roto leagues, because that's the, I mean, Santana walks so much in points leagues, I don't think you can sit him, but roto leagues, he might be somebody who's in and out of your lineup. If there was a bunch of lefties, that might be an excuse to sit him for another corner infielder.
Okay, let's go to Ian Desmond. Now, he homered and he stole a base at the Reds yesterday, but Desmond has not been good in a while. In August, he's batting .231 with that one home run and two steals, three walks to 23 strikeouts. The splits for Desmond, these ones, I never know which one is legit. Is it the home road or is it lefty-righty? Is it both? But again, for Desmond, a lot better against lefties than he is against righties, and a lot better at home than he is on the road. Is Desmond a guy you could consider dropping with how deep shortstop is and how bad he's been lately?
Dropping?
I'm like, sorry, sitting.
Sitting? Okay. You know, shortstop isn't quite as deep as it was before Story and Aledmys Diaz went down, and obviously Jung Ho Kang's out of the picture as well. We kept thinking he was going to be part of that depth. Brad Miller's come along, but, you know, you have just as much justification to start him in the outfield. I think it's a stretch. It may be in a shallow league if you happen to have stumbled upon a lot of the depth at that position. It's something you could think about, but okay. I'm not even sure, like, the split, the lefty righty thing. Yeah, he's been much better against lefties, but his numbers against righties for a shortstop are still plenty startable. You know?
They are. 270, 327, 450. Ryan Healy is owned in 14% of leagues. He's not really doing that much, but he's getting a little bit better lately. And against righties, Ryan Healy has an 849 OPS. Against lefties, he has a 593 OPS. Still against righties with that 849 OPS, three walks to 23 strikeouts. So this is a guy, Scott, in Healy, who's coming on a little bit, has a nice hitting streak going. And if you own him, it's probably in a categories league, right? Not a points league.
Yeah. Probably, just because the points league lineups aren't deep enough that you have to reach that far.
Okay.
He's a hot hand. I think he's pretty low end, though.
Yeah. So let's go to Kepler. Max Kepler, 77% owned. Against lefties, 212, 292, 341. Against righties, 272, 355, 545. So very, very good numbers. But you know what? I don't know if it matters right now with Kepler, Scott. I looked at their last 17 games. The Twins have faced two left-handed starters, and Kepler has been really bad for a few weeks now, basically since that amazing hot streak.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't even know if it matters lefty or righty for Kepler. What are you doing with him?
Yeah, I'm sitting him if I can. Probably a little easier to do in a three outfielder league. I'm not quite ready to drop him, but yeah, he's too cold to start right now.
Trey Turner. Now, I did these numbers yesterday. Since being recalled, Trey Turner was the number three second baseman in points leagues, number four in roto. He had the most steals and the second most runs at the position. And that was before another four-hit game for Turner. I think he reached base or had hits in eight straight plate appearances over two games. Something crazy. But this guy's plate discipline is bad. Six walks, 36 strikeouts. The splits for Turner, now they're much better because he beat up on Wade Miley a little bit yesterday. But going into yesterday's game, he had a pretty bad slash line against lefties and an amazing slash line in 114 at-bats against righties, and OPS over 1,000 now. But, you know, it's weird. He was great against lefties in the minors, so that didn't really make any sense to me.
Yeah. I think it's just a small sample size thing. I mean, him being a right-handed hitter, I wouldn't expect him to have trouble against lefties. So this doesn't mean anything to me.
What are your overall thoughts on Trey Turner with that bad plate discipline, six walks, 36 strikeouts in 37 games, but a .335 batting average, and he's playing really well?
Yeah, I've been starting him like as my my second baseman in a points league, no middle infield spot. He's the best option I have at that deep position. And the plate discipline, it does trouble me a little because, you know, batting average is a big part of the skill set, but he steals so much. He gets so many extra base hits. I feel like even if he, I mean, obviously if he slumps this late in the season, you do think about sitting him, but just thinking more from a long-term perspective, I think he doesn't necessarily need to be this 300 hitter to be a must-start fantasy option with everything else he does.
All right, let's look at the pitchers from last night, Scott. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Here's the good. Masahiro Tanaka, who has now had two good starts in a row on regular rest. Not his last two starts. One is on a regular rest, one is on long rest. But his last two starts that have come on regular rest have been good, and that was a big issue for him.
Seems like since we figured out that that's an issue, it has been a non-issue.
Yeah, and he just issued his first walk in five starts. So Tanaka is the number 11 starting pitcher in points, number 17 in Roto. Kyle Hendricks, believe it or not, is number 17 in points, not as many innings as some of the other guys, but number 9 in Roto. So Tanaka's been better than Hendricks in points leagues, worse than Hendricks in Roto. And then Rick Porcello. I mean, if this doesn't blow your mind, Rick Porcello is the number 3 starting pitcher in points leagues with his 17-3 record, and number 7 in Roto. He's not that much worse. And then, we have Johnny Cueto, who was good last night. That's two good starts in a row, but last one didn't have strikeouts. This one did. And Rich Hill makes his first start in over a month, and he only struck out 3 Giants, but come on, 6 scoreless innings, 5 hits, no walks. How, geez, Rich Hill, 209 ERA this year. Unbelievable. Tanaka, Hendricks, Porcello, Cueto, Rich Hill. What do you think?
Okay, well, Tanaka's must start. Cueto still must start. I don't think that changed with his slump. Rich Hill, you know, this was such an efficient outing from him after all that time off. No walks over 6 innings, I think through, 81 pitches or something. So I feel pretty comfortable starting him right away. The interesting ones, I think, are Hendricks and Porcello, because they're both in the Cy Young race for their respective leagues, but I think there's a lot of skepticism from some parts over their candidacy. And, you know, considering this is mostly a stats-driven podcast, I think people might be surprised to learn I'm more skeptical of Hendricks' candidacy than Porcello's.
I know why.
Why?
Because Scott White loves him some innings.
It is the most underrated aspect of pitching evaluation right now. Really, with the whole revolution and the statistics revolution and how much we value ratio stats, which is understandable and I think worthwhile, but innings kind of get lost in the shuffle there.
Yeah,
and
you're right. Completely agree.
And they play such a big part in pitcher value, both in real life and in fantasy, of course. Hendricks isn't even on pace for 200. I don't see how he wins the Cy Young with that. Now, it's getting better. 3 of his 5 starts of 7 innings or more have come over his last 5 starts. So Madden seems to be loosening the reins a bit, and he should. Obviously, Hendricks, you're starting him in fantasy. That's not an issue. But I feel like Porcello and J Happ both, the argument always boils down to this old school versus new school thing, and they both have such great win-loss records, and if they win the Cy Young, that'll be the only reason they win the Cy Young. I mean, they're having pretty good years apart from win-loss record, considering pitching has been so much worse across the league. You know,
yeah. Porcello has a 3.23 ERA. That doesn't exactly scream Cy Young these days.
But Kluber, who, you know, we've mentioned a few times might be the leading candidate in the AL, he's 3.14.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, a 3 ERA is much better this year than it is last year. And just in terms of strikeouts, you know, we've kind of gotten used to, okay, a guy with a sub 8/9 rate is not a good strikeout pitcher, and you kind of need to be a good strikeout pitcher to be a good pitcher. But when the good strikeout pitchers, you know, all have ERAs over 4 and whips around 1.35, not all the good strikeout pitchers, of course, but surprisingly high number of them, then, you know, strikeout rate kind of becomes an afterthought, right? I feel like.
Yeah. I don't really care that much about strikeout rate if I'm evaluating the Cy Young. If I'm evaluating fantasy, maybe, but if I'm just looking at what a guy has done this year, who cares how many guys he's striking out if he's being effective? And Porcello has the 6th most innings pitched in baseball right now.
I wouldn't go quite that far. I think it's a big part of the package, but well, I don't think Cy Young should be just a FIP leaderboard any more than I think MVP should just be a WAR leaderboard. I mean, that's really not the point.
Well, but if you had a guy who was an extreme ground ball pitcher and he had a really low strikeout rate, I don't remember what Brandon Webb's numbers were in his prime. And I don't know if he was a Cy Young contender, but he was obviously really good. Like Chin-Ming Wong had a year where he was really good. I'm not going to punish them in Cy Young voting because they don't strike out guys if they go about getting players out differently than the rest of the pack, you know? If it still works for them, then it works for them.
Would you have gone with Greinke last year over Arrieta?
Yes, I would have.
Okay. I was definitely in the Arrieta camp.
My argument for Greinke was that he was never bad last year. He never had a stretch. I don't really remember what the case was with Arrieta, but I do remember Kershaw struggled for a bit. So Greinke was clearly the guy over Kershaw for me because it was like Verlander this year. People are making the case for him as a Cy Young. I don't really think you can do that because Verlander was really bad for a month or a month and a half, and Greinke never had a stretch like that. I mean, he was awesome right out of the gate. Of course, he had a few bad starts here and there, but so consistent. And I didn't really care about the strikeouts. At the end of the year, if the numbers are there and he pitched great and he didn't have as many strikeouts, it doesn't really matter to me in Cy Young voting. But, I don't know, fun conversation. The bad from yesterday, Zach Greinke. Hey! Whew, boy, has he been bad since coming off the DL. He's actually had some decent starts, but hasn't been very consistent since coming off the DL and got roughed up a little bit by the Braves. Trevor Bauer's 89% owned. He's been a little up and down lately, but mostly down, I'd say. And Tanner Roark was able to rebound after a terrible first inning in which I heard the Nationals announcer say this was the worst control he'd seen all year from Tanner Roark. Now, those Nationals guys are a little prone to hyperbole, but still. He actually, Scott, is walking a lot more batters lately, Tanner Roark.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Greinke, Bauer, Roark, you know, are you worried about these guys? Like, I feel like Bauer would be the one with the most worries.
Yeah, Bauer, I think, is pretty fringy. I mean, that 13 strikeout effort in his previous start was, at least recently, is the aberration. There's been a lot of ugly from him, and I don't think he had really established himself as a trustworthy option before that, even though he was getting close for a while, it seemed. So, yeah, I don't even know that he's must own. Greinke and Roark. Man, Roark, I think is mostly fine. I mean, the walks are a little concerning, but there hasn't been too many disaster starts in there. Greinke, I mean, he's mostly avoided disaster as well. I just feel like we're kind of back to square one with him where, you know, it seemed like before the injury, he had settled back into being this borderline ace in fantasy. And now we're wondering what's wrong with him again. And it's probably nothing. It's probably just rust or, you know, a confluence of a series of unfortunate events. So I'm not really that motivated to sit him, but, you know, another couple starts like this, and it's something you have to think about.
Here are the matchups. Greinke is at San Francisco in a one-start week. Bauer has Minnesota and Miami at home, and Roark has the Phillies and the Mets both on the road. So, you know, Bauer and Roark, I don't think you can drop them going into these two-start weeks. You wouldn't drop Roark. I don't think you can drop Bauer going into this two-start week. I'm not sure. How do you feel about that? Yeah. Miami and Minnesota at home?
No, that's a good point. That's something you need to pay particularly close attention to this time of year, is just what does the schedule look like next week before I make a move with this guy. Like, yesterday I was writing about dropping Joe Musgrove. Well, he's a two-star guy next week, too. The way his last couple starts have gone, they may be two disastrous starts, but it still gives you some pause about dropping him knowing he's a two-star pitcher.
He's a two-star pitcher next week?
Joe Musgrove, yes.
Oh, I thought he was a two-star pitcher this week.
Something's changed in the schedule.
Well, maybe something changed. Maybe they're bumping him.
Open the two-star list up now and double-check.
No, Musgrove. You're right. He's got Oakland and at Texas.
Yeah.
All right. Well, either way, how about the ugly? That was just the bad. We haven't even gotten to the ugly. This is the ugly from last night. These were the guys who gave up the same amount of earned runs per inning pitch or more.
Okay.
Jacob DeGrom, his ERA has gone up from 229 to 296 in his last two starts. All right. Marco Estrada. You remember what I said last time about Estrada, that some Blue Jays people thought the six-man rotation was messing with Estrada because he's such a field pitcher. And the changeup is so important.
Yeah.
All right, so they're not on the six-man right now, but Estrada hadn't pitched since August 16th. I don't know what happened there. Maybe they had some off days?
That's a long break between starts.
Yeah, so I don't know if you're buying that as an explanation, but he's been really bad last couple of times out, and maybe it is the extended rest thing for him.
Well,
Garrett Cole. Go ahead, Scott.
Sorry, he's kind of exhibit A of the weirdness of starting pitching this year, in that he has been a much better strikeout pitcher here recently. His last 10 starts, 9.4 strikeouts per nine. Oh, where did that come from, Marco Estrada? 4.21 ERA during that stretch. So, like, it seems like the more bats he misses, the worse he gets. And that's kind of been a league-wide phenomenon, like we were saying earlier, with Happ and Porcello being leading Cy Young candidates. I don't know what the explanation is. If it's just a complete fluke, I would lean that direction, because strikeouts should be a good thing, right?
Yeah, maybe they're related to home runs. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
A lot of all-or-nothing outcomes there. Garrett Cole, he's got a 6.08 ERA in August. He is also killing my fantasy teams. I had him in DeGrom last night in our auction league. Cole's a two-star pitcher at Chicago and home against Milwaukee next week. And Julio Teheran, you know, I don't know, it might be a little hard to trust right now, Teheran, but he's got San Diego at home and Philadelphia on the road. Such good matchups.
Yeah, so not to comment on everybody, but Teheran, I do have something to say about everybody.
Yeah,
Teheran,
that's fine.
His velocity, it's kind of like he started his season over. Remember at the start of the year, his velocity was down. He was averaging about 90 on his fastball, and we were close to writing him off before he went on that great run. And it's kind of like that started over now with the lat injury. His average fastball velocity has been down in that 90 range again, and sure enough, he's not having much success with it. So I think it would just be a matter of him building up that arm strength again, unless he's still hurt, but that doesn't sound like it's the case. So I'm not especially worried. Jacob deGrom, I mean, two really awful starts, 25 hits, 13 earned runs in the last two, but his velocity's fine. Everybody seems to think it's just an issue with command, pitches leaking over the plate. They're probably right. I don't think it's a long-term concern. Cole is weird, because Cole has been struggling all season, even before his triceps injury, 7.2 strikeouts per nine in his first 12 starts. And he's a guy that the lower strikeout rate hasn't helped. But there's like nothing there to explain how he's different from a year ago. He's throwing just as hard, pitch selection about the same.
I'm
averaging over 95 on his fastball.
I know, but he's usually like one of the hardest throwers in baseball. He's still throwing hard, but I feel like he's lost, you know, well, I'm going to look right now. But I that was kind of one of the differences, because I've been a very frustrated Cole owner.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. It's pretty similar. He's ramped it up. He's ramped it up. Earlier in the year, there was a pretty big difference in his four-seamer, but right now, you want to compare July last year and August, July and August last year to this year, basically the same velocity.
Yeah.
So, okay. I can't really point to that.
I don't really understand it. He's not giving up a lot of home runs.
No.
Which is usually how you see ERA inflation happen. He's not, the walk rate's a little up from last year, but it's not a bad walk rate. He's just exchange strikeouts for hits, it seems like.
Bad exchange.
Yeah. I don't really know what's up with that. I would lean toward, you know, calling him a big bounce back candidate for next year, but it's hard to trust him right now. I'd have a hard time just buying into the idea that the switch is going to flip overnight and he's going to be fine from this point forward.
At Chicago, the Cubs, and home against Milwaukee next week for Garrett Cole.
Two-star week, man.
I know.
I'd still probably roll the dice in a points league, just because, you know, you can live with bad ratios if they're two halfway decent starts.
I'm going to roll the dice in our auction league because I'm so far behind first place. I think I'm in third now. I'm pretty much playing for second. What's the point? What's the difference between second and fourth? I might as well go for it, you know?
Yeah.
At this point. All right, Scott, that's going to do it for our podcast. A little bit short today. I do apologize. We'll have plenty of emails tomorrow, and the two-star pitchers, you know, like, would you start Jacob deGrom? I'm sure you would. Would you start Julio Teheran? He's got very good matchups next week. Also, Matt Shoemaker, Zach Davies, guys like that, Matt Boyd, I don't know if Kendall Graveman's a two-star pitcher, but we can break it down for you tomorrow and, of course, recap all of Thursday's action, except for the two football games. You can hear those recaps on tomorrow's Fantasy Football Today podcast. For Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. This has been Fantasy Baseball Today. You take it easy out there. We'll talk to you on Friday. Machado.